Hello, everybody. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Joshua chapter 18, going to do the entire chapter, 28 verses here. This chapter concerns the division of the seven tribes that have not had their land allotted to them yet. This division will be done at Shiloh, not at Gilgal, as Judah, Ephraim, and Manasseh were dealt with and had their lands divided out in chapters 15 and 16. And chapter 17 dealt with the daughters of Zelophehad, who had no brothers to inherit, and so there was a special exception made. Usually it was males that inherited, but now the daughters would inherit in such a case, and so that's our context. So now we start in verses 1 and 2 of Joshua 18. Then the whole congregation of the sons of Israel assembled themselves at Shiloh and set up the tent of meeting there, and the land was subdued before them. There remained among the sons of Israel seven tribes who had not divided their inheritance. So Joshua said to the sons of Israel, "How long will you put off entering to take possession of the land which the Lord, the God of your fathers, has given you?" Now verse 1 says the whole congregation assembled at Shiloh. That would be the whole congregation diminished by the separation of the three tribes, Judah, Ephraim, and Manasseh, who had already had their lands distributed in chapters 15 and 16. I'm sure they're down there with their land, so that leaves the rest. And of course that doesn't include Gad, Reuben, and half Manasseh on the eastern side of the Jordan. So we're basically talking about 6.5 tribes that are left. They gathered up at Shiloh. Where was Shiloh? It was in the hill country, in that spine of hills that ran up the center of the promised land. It was about 20 to 25 miles north of Jerusalem, 23 miles according to BibleAtlas.org, 12 miles north of Bethel according to BibleAtlas.org, and 10 miles south of Shechem, where Ebal and Gerizim, Mounts Ebal and Gerizim, the mountains of blessings and cursings, were. So it was centrally located. It was in the northern part of Ephraim, of what was going to be Ephraim after the division occurred. Now let me read you some interesting stuff from Easton's dictionary about Shiloh. Shiloh means a place of rest. That's what the word means. It's a city of Ephraim on the north side of Bethel, as I've just said. It is now and remember, Easton's is writing in the 1800s. It's a mass of shapeless ruins. I assume it's still a mass of shapeless ruins. Here the tabernacle was set up after the conquest, as we see here in this chapter, actually. Verses 1 through 10, we're going to see the tabernacle is set up here at Shiloh, where the tabernacle remained during all the period of the judges till the ark fell into the hands of the Philistines. No spot in central Palestine could be more secluded than this early sanctuary. Nothing more featureless than the landscape around. So featureless, indeed, the landscape, and so secluded the spot, that from the time of St. Jerome, he was 5th century A.D., till its recovery by Dr. Robinson in 1838, the very site was forgotten and unknown. It is referred to by Jeremiah 500 years after Shiloh's destruction. So interesting that Shiloh was so nondescript it got lost. But it was important because the tabernacle was there for about 300 years, I think. I read in Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown, 300 years. It's a long time. Now, why did Israel move from Gilgal to Shiloh? Remember, Gilgal is down southeast of Jerusalem, right there on the near the banks of the Jordan River, right to the north of the Dead Sea, where Joshua originally crossed the Jordan River to enter the Promised Land for the first time. Well, here's some reasons why, some optional reasons. One, it was more convenient for allocating the land up there. It's more centrally located than Gilgal was. Another reason is that Shiloh was closer to where Joshua lived, because Joshua's tribe was Ephraim, and Shiloh was in Ephraim. And of course, Joshua is the commander-in-chief. Shiloh was more convenient for the Israelites to come to feast. Gilgal was far away for most people to be able to worship at the tent of meeting. So, basically, the central location of Shiloh not only is more convenient for allocating land, as I just said, but it's also more convenient for the Israelites to come to feast. So, that makes sense. Now, when did Israel move up to Shiloh? John Gill says it was probably about 6 or 7 years after the arrival in Canaan. We've already calculated in a previous chapter it took Joshua about 7 years to conquer Canaan. I think that number's pretty hard. We use the calculations of the length of the conquest plus Caleb's age and so forth. Anyway, 7 years. 6 or 7, John Gill says. Clark says 7 years. Now, the Tent of Meeting, of course, that's the famous tabernacle. It was built in the first year of the Exodus and set up in, excuse me, the first month of the first year of the Exodus, and set up in the second month of the first year at Mount Sinai, and was carried through the desert. Now, that tent of meeting stayed at Shiloh for more than 300 years, as I just said. It was placed in Shiloh. Why Shiloh? Well, some have speculated it was because of the appointment and direction of God. Perhaps God told Eleazar the high priest where to put it, perhaps either by a audible voice or by the umming and thumbing, as John Gill says. Who knows? But that's what they did. We assume it was by the direction of God. Now, verse 2 says, there remained among the sons of Israel 7 tribes. Well, 5 tribes already had their allotment, as I mentioned. Manasseh, Ephraim, and Judah were allotted their tribes in chapters 15 and 16. And the tribes on the Transjordan, Reuben, Gad, and half Manasseh, the eastern Manasseh, were done on the other side, on the eastern side. We saw that in Joshua 13. So now we got 7 tribes left to go: Benjamin, Simeon, Zebulun, Issachar, Asher, Naphtali, and Dan. And in this chapter, we're going to handle Benjamin alone. We'll handle the other tribes in a later audio. Now, verse 2 says that these 7 tribes had not divided their inheritance. That means the lot had not been cast yet. Now, this time before the lot is cast, Joshua is going to get a survey done of the land. Now, in the chapter, or the chapters, chapters 15 and 16, that describe the division of the land for Judah, Ephraim, and Manasseh, there's no mention of surveying, but here we've got a survey done first. We'll see about the survey in the next couple of verses, but here in verse 3, we see first that Joshua said to the sons of Israel, how long will you put off entering to take possession of the land? Now, a question might arise here. Well, the land hadn't been surveyed yet, so what are you fussing at the 7 tribes for not entering to the land? How can they enter into the land when it hasn't been surveyed yet? It's impossible to take land when the land to be taken is not known. Well, John Gill, I think, has a simple answer here. The 7 tribes were indifferent in asking Joshua to proceed with the lots. They stood pat after the 2.5 tribes received their inheritance, and so they didn't say anything to Joshua. How about cast lots for us, or how about survey the land for us so we can go ahead and take our inheritance? They just stayed pat. Now, why? Why would they not urge Joshua to go ahead? Well, here's some options that Gil gives us. Perhaps these 7 tribes, it's actually 6.5 tribes were enjoying their present affluence from the spoils of war, from the conquest of Canaan that had previously taken place in the last 6 or 7 years. Perhaps they were tired of fighting in those wars. And maybe they noticed the dissatisfaction of Ephraim and Manasseh in chapters 15 and 16. We saw that Ephraim and Manasseh started complaining because they didn't get enough. And so maybe the 7 tribes thought, well, maybe we'd have a better shot if we just wait a little bit before we take off and try to fight the pockets of Canaanites that are left, before we have to clear all those forests, before we have to work so hard. I don't know what the reason was, but whatever it was, they were putting it off. And Joshua says, got to get moving here. Now let's look at this waiting that the 6.5 tribes did, the putting off. Let's see what Jameson Fawcett Brown says about that. Quote, the selection of Shiloh for the seat of worship, together with the consequent removal of the camp thither, had necessarily interrupted the casting of lots, which was commenced by fixing localities for the tribes of Judah and Joseph. That's Ephraim and Manasseh, chapters 15 and 16. Various causes led to a long delay in resuming it. The satisfaction of the people with their change to so pleasant and fertile a district, their preference of a nomad life, a love of ease and reluctance to renew the war, seemed to have made them indifferent to the possession of a settled inheritance. But Joshua was too much alive to the duty laid on him by the Lord to let matters continue in that state. And accordingly, since a general conquest of the land had been made, he resolved to proceed immediately with the lot, believing that when each tribe should receive its inheritance, a new motive would arise to lead them to exert themselves in securing the full possession. And that's basically putting in a fancy way what I just said. The people were lazy. They didn't want to keep fighting these 6.5 tribes. And Joshua says, maybe if you, instead of being a wandering nomad in the area, maybe if you actually set up boundaries and governments and a court system, maybe we could get on with establishing the nation of Israel. This is what Adam Clark says about this wait that the 6.5 tribes engaged in. Quote, we find an unaccountable backwardness in this people to enter on the inheritance which God had given them. They had so, I don't know if it's unaccountable. I think they were just lazy. But anyway, Clark continues, they had so long been supported by miracle without any exertions of their own that they found it difficult to shake themselves from their inactivity. When it was necessary that all the people should go out to battle, they went with a measure of confidence, expecting miraculous help from God and confiding in their numbers. But when each tribe found it necessary to fight for itself in order to its establishment and the extension of its borders, it was discouraged and chose rather a life of inglorious ease than the possession of an inheritance which would cost it much labor to conquer. So basically, Adam Clark agrees with the idea that these people were just lazy. They were at ease in Zion. They needed to pick up their weapons and go to war. Jameson Fawcett Brown goes even further and says, quote, this reproof that Joshua has in saying, how long will you wait? How long will you put off? This reproof, Jameson Fawcett Brown say, conveys an impression that the seven tribes were dilatory to a criminal extent. Criminal, now that's saying something. We go down to Joshua 18, verses 4 through 7. Joshua continues, provide for yourselves three men from each tribe that I may send them, and that they may arise and walk through the land and write a description of it according to their inheritance. Then they shall return to me. They shall divide it into seven portions. Judah shall stay in its territory on the south, and the house of Joseph shall stay in their territory on the north. That's talking about the three tribes in chapters 15 and 16 that already had their territory. They're going to stay put. Verse 6, and these three men, these surveyors from each tribe, are not going to mess with those three tribes. Verse 6, you shall describe the land in seven divisions and bring the description here to me. Notice that, seven divisions, one for each tribe that's remaining. I will cast lots for you here before the Lord our God, and that's here in Shiloh, before the tabernacle. For the Levites have no portion among you, because the priesthood of the Lord is their inheritance. Gad and Reuben and the half-tribe of Manasseh have also received their inheritance eastward beyond the Jordan, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave them. Now in verse 4 it says, Joshua says, provide for yourselves three men from each tribe. Now those are the three surveyors, but they probably had a military guard that went them to protect them from any bad Kenites that might have tried to attack them. Now, of course, when it says three men from each tribe, that means three men from each of the seven tribes that were left. It's actually six and a half, but they needed three men from each of those seven tribal divisions. And, of course, it probably would not mean three men from each tribe, including Judah, Ephraim, and Manasseh, because they've already been taken care of. Likewise, verse 4, it says when you walk through the land, it doesn't mean walk through the whole land of Israel, just walk through the undivided part of it, leaving out Judah, Ephraim, and Manasseh. And then, in verse 4, Joshua says, then they, the three men from each tribe, shall return to me. That's probably a direction of command. When you finish surveying, come back to me so I can look at the survey. It could be a statement of fact for assurance and saying, you're going to return. You're not going to be killed by the Kenites. I don't think so. I think he's just saying, come on back here. Let me look at it. Verse 5 says, they shall divide it into seven portions. Now the question is, did they divide these seven portions so that the seven portions were equal, or did they make one portion bigger and one portion smaller according to the population of the tribes? Now there are two possible positions you can take on that. One is they divided the land equally. John Gill suggests that. Perhaps he doesn't really believe it, but he suggests it. He says they need to be equal because the lots and the divisions need to be equal, because otherwise what's the point of casting lots afterwards? Everybody would get an equal piece of land, regardless of how big or small the tribe was. Well, there's a problem with that. If the lots were equal, equal lots would not take care of unequally sized tribes. Also, if you look at a map, the tribal divisions were not, as a matter of fact, equal. Some were larger than the others. Look at old Zebulun in the Valley of Jezreel. It's a little tiny division. So that can't be it. So the other option is that the divisions were made according to the size of the largest to the smallest tribes. But now the problem with that is the surveyors would be deciding on who got the biggest division and who got the smallest division. It wouldn't be God. It wouldn't be the lot. Well, how to answer that problem? How to answer the fact that it looks like neither option is viable? Well, here's how the commentator Ellicott answers the problem. I'm going to quote from him. Quote, in Numbers 26, verses 54 through 55, we read, to many thou shalt give the more inheritance, and to few thou shalt give the less inheritance. Notwithstanding, the land shall be divided by lot. In other words, it sounds like both is going on. The surveyors are giving more or less, and then there's going to be a lot too. So how do you reconcile that? Ellicott continues, these words imply that there must be unequal portions of territory for larger and smaller tribes. So that would be the surveyors carving out some big chunks and carving out some small pieces. But then Ellicott continues, but that the particular position of each tribe must be settled by the lot, whereof the whole disposing is of the Lord. Now, I think what Ellicott means here is that the surveyors made some portions big, some small, and then just trusted to the lot to decide which tribe would take which portion, and would trust that the big tribes would draw lots and get a big portion. That, would, of course, would take a lot of trust in God for that to happen. I think that's the only way you can reconcile those two things, surveyors deciding what's big and small, and God deciding through the lot who gets which portion. Now, one reason they did the division by lots was to stop complaints, as Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say, so the tribes wouldn't gripe, hey, my lot's too small, you're ripping me off. Ephraim and Manasseh had done that, you recall, chapters 15 and 16. It's not stated in chapters 15 and 16 whether the survey was done first for Judah, Ephraim, and Manasseh, as Ellicott points out, commenting on verse 9 of this chapter. And I can't help but wonder, maybe the fact that the survey was not done, that might have been a bone of contention. I don't know, maybe not. But at any rate, Ephraim and Manasseh were the only two that complained. Adam Clark says this survey is, as far as he can recollect, the first act of surveying on record. The description that was done in the book was a written survey. It was not an oral description. It was written down. And basically the way it does, it's just like the old-fashioned deeds in America. They called them meets and bounds, the deed description. It says, from this rock over here in the northeast corner of this pasture to the big oak tree in the southeast corner, along the brook that runs between the same. And that's probably exactly what they did back then. They didn't have surveying equipment. They didn't have GPSs and all that, of course. Now, notice it's seven divisions. There's seven tribes that need land. They had seven divisions, so the surveyors put all the descriptions in seven different portions of their books, however they did it. And so that would make it real easy to cast the lot. Some people say nobody knows how they cast the lot, but think about it. You could have two urns, and you could have seven rocks representing each of the seven divisions of the book. Let's say the books are numbered 1 through 7, and then you put 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 on the seven rocks, put it in one urn. And then you put the name of the seven tribes in a different urn. And then you say, okay, who goes first? Come up here, stick your left hand in the left urn, your right hand in the right urn, draw a description, a deed description. Well, they didn't have deeds, I'm sorry, a land description with your left hand, and with your right hand, pick the tribe. And oh, look at here, we have Dan matched with this land description. And that's how they could have cast lots. Again, that's just speculation. Notice that once again, the Levites are mentioned as having no portion. They're constantly mentioned. Every time they talk about division of the land, the text always has the Levites. They don't have a portion because the priesthood is their portion. In other words, don't forget the Levites. They don't get land, but they're going to get tithes later on because of their tabernacle duties. We go now to Joshua 18, verses 8 through 10. Then the men, that's the three surveyors from each of the seven tribes, they arose and went. And Joshua commanded those who went to describe the land, saying, go and walk through the land and describe it, and return to me, that I will cast lots for you here before the Lord in Shiloh. Before the Lord means before that tabernacle, because the Lord dwelt in the holy of holies in the tabernacle. So the men went and passed through the land and described it by cities and seven divisions in a book. And they came to Joshua to the camp at Shiloh. And Joshua cast lots for them in Shiloh before the Lord. Again, that's before the tabernacle, because God lived in the tabernacle. And there Joshua divided the land to the sons of Israel according to their division. Now, these descriptions in the book, the seven divisions of the book, it would describe cities and towns and hills and valleys and woods. Were the hills too high? Was there no pasture land in the hills? Is there a floodplain here? Well, that's not good. Can't grow anything there. The waters might wash it out, or might wash your houses out. Oh, there's a lot of woods here. That's valuable for trees, but they're difficult to clear. Also, the quality of the soil might be mentioned in this survey. And notice how difficult it is to make all that equal. You got so many factors. You might say, well, this is a big tribe, so they need a big area, but then the big area's got nothing but rocky soil, and you can't grow anything in it. So it was not a one-dimensional or one-criterion type division, and there would be plenty of room for complaint. That's why they had to do it by lots. Now, these surveyors went and passed in verse 9. They passed through the land. They were unhindered. It could be because the fear of the Israelites were still on the Canaanites. They'd just gotten whopped very badly as Joshua went crusading through the land, beating everybody in sight. Or it could be because the surveyors had a military guard. Now, this surveying was probably a skilled activity. Surveying and geometry must have been learned in Egypt, as John Gill says, because the Egyptians were very good at this, because the flooding of the Nile constantly confused land titles, and so they had to be good at surveying to decide who owned what land. We go now to Joshua 18, verse 11. Now the lot of the tribe of the sons of Benjamin came up according to their families, and the territory of their lot lay between the sons of Judah and the sons of Joseph. So the rest of this chapter is going to be a description of what land Benjamin got. It says that his lot came up between the sons of Judah and the sons of Joseph. So if we look at a map here, we'll see that's exactly what happened. Judah is in the south. Right north of Judah is Benjamin. And then Benjamin, right north of Benjamin, is Ephraim. So when it says their lot lay between the sons of Judah and the sons of Joseph, Joseph is Ephraim and Manasseh. And it's more particularly Ephraim that's to the north of Benjamin. And notice this order was predicted. Well, it was impliedly predicted by Moses in Deuteronomy 33. If you go by the order that Moses mentions, he says in verse 7, Deuteronomy 33, and this regarding Judah. So he said, hear, O Lord, the voice of Judah, bring him to his people, etc., etc. And then he talks about some Levites and drops, which they don't count here. And then we go down to verses 12 and 13 of Deuteronomy 33, of Benjamin, he said, so it goes Judah, and then Benjamin, may the beloved of the Lord dwell in security by him. And then we drop down to verse 13, of Joseph, that's Ephraim and Manasseh, the sons of Joseph, of Joseph, he said, blessed of the Lord be his land. So Moses goes in the order, south to north, that the lot fell on these particular tribes. Now, I'm not going to go through in verses 12 through 27 the border. There's a lot of towns in here, which I'm sure you've heard of before. Beth Horon, Kiriath Jearim, which is Hebron, all kind of stuff. Bethel, Jericho. But then there's a lot of towns you haven't heard of because they've probably been lost. It is not worth going through all of that. But we just know that the land was meticulously described and divided up, and Benjamin got his piece. Now, let me look at a map, and we'll close up this audio. If you look at Jerusalem, the southern boundary of Benjamin goes right through the middle of Jerusalem, from the tip of the Dead Sea, right through the middle of Jerusalem, all the way through the hill country. Then when you get down to the shuffle of the plain of Philistia more particularly, the territory of Dan kicks in. So Benjamin doesn't go all the way to the Mediterranean coast, just goes through the hill country to the Jordan Valley right north of the Dead Sea. And the That's west to east, and then the south is in Jerusalem, and you go north to Bethel. Bethel's about 5 miles northwest of Jerusalem. Bethel and Ai in the northern part of Benjamin. Bethel, of course, is where Jacob had his famous vision of Jacob's ladder, or his dream. Ai was where Achan hid the spoil that was supposed to be dedicated to God. He hid it under his tent and caused the Israelites to get defeated because of his disobedience. And then another famous city of Benjamin is Jericho, of course, the first town that Joshua conquered. The famous walls of Jericho fell. That is on the eastern end of Benjamin, right near the Jordan River Valley. So Benjamin is taken care of. That prepares us for the next chapter. We're going to look at our next chapter of the inheritance for Simeon, Zebulun, Asher, Naphtali, Dan, and Joshua himself, the leader of all this. We'll do that in the next chapter. I hope to see you then, chapter 19. Hope you enjoyed chapter 18.